Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW
Collision. Well, Eric, we finally saw Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. in the ring together, standing face to face. Zack throws a medium slap at Danielson. Danielson whacks him in return with a harder slap. And the announcers declare we'll finally find out who the best technical wrestler in the world is after Zack Sabre talked on commentary about waiting 15 years for this match. How do you think they finished up? They tied things together in terms of what presumably will be the main event match in Seattle tomorrow night at WrestleDream.
I don't think it's the main event. On the preview show that aired after Rampage last night, Darby Allin said he was the main event.
Well,
That'd
be my – I mean, he's from there too, and there's a title on the line, and there's a lot more backstory to that. But it has been 15 years in the making. I'll take – Darby Christian's my pick for the last match. I just kind of figured most people were predicting – Danielson, Zack Sabre, and it kind of fits the theme of Wrestle Dream as being a dream match rather than a more traditional just kind of grudge title match. But if they do that, 2 out of 3 falls, Christian and Darby, I think it's a good call. I'm not sure it's the right call. What do you think?
I think it argues toward Edge debuting, Adam Copeland debuting, right, if that's the last
sure.
match.
Yeah.
You would assume Darby wins because he's in his hometown and – That would be more of a Tony Khan move based on what we know of his booking,
yeah.
That he wins the 2 or 3 falls match and then somehow Adam Copeland debuts to give the big water cooler buzz factor at the end of tomorrow night's pay-per-view. You started off, talking about ZSJ and Brian Danielson, and to me that match is symbolic of what Wrestle Dream is, which is like a show for the hardcore wrestling geeks out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like the people who would love to see, well, who would know off the top of their head, these two guys have won the Brian Danielson Best Technical Wrestler Award winner in the Observer poll between
right.
two of them for 20 years in a row or whatever. And so it's a dream match for them. It's a dream match for me as well. I just, not maybe the marquee box office value of some of your matches, and maybe that's why it's not the main event. Maybe that's why it'll be the semi-main. My favorite part was ZSJ on commentary. He did his phony fake phone ring, his cell phone ringing, and then he said, "Hello, it's Brian Danielson. He's phoning this in," which just really popped me. I just thought that was
wow,
really
yeah.
He
yep.
was, he was the best part of the commentary on the main event because, you had cranky old JR out there still bopping around on AEW somehow.
Who's a legal man?
Yeah, just, focused, just buzzkill, total joy kill, hates the product. Why he's still there, I guess it's just Tony Khan taking mercy on him for all of his health issues. And that's fine, I guess, if anyone deserves a Lifetime Achievement Award. It's JR, but just maybe have him work in the front office instead. Anyway, yeah, I'm excited for it. I mean, circumstances meant that I guess they couldn't have Sabre Jr. there until today. So,
yeah.
It's... I guess to me tonight, Collision was probably other people liked it better than I did. I thought it was a solid, if not spectacular, go home show. It was action centered. Wednesday's Dynamite was more talking centered. The talking on this show, outside of the Omega Jericho promo, was mostly confined to recap packages from that excellent preview show that they always air on Friday nights after Rampage before a pay-per-view, so nobody sees it.
I know.
But it's just incredibly produced work.
Yeah.
To me, Collision tonight didn't feel as hot, as intriguing at the end as Dynamite did on Wednesday. All I care about, all I want to know is who was under the masks attacking Jay White, right? One of the more interesting things on the in AEW in a while. And they made reference to it in the opening match tonight with Andrade and Juice Robinson, but didn't really follow up on it. You would expect that they would follow
up on it. Well, Nigel told you the answer. It's obviously MJF because he wore the devil mask. So it's got to be. I love Kevin Kelly pushing back on – I mean, Nigel, it was just – preposterous the way Nigel just seemed like a complete, you know, fool by going, it's definitive proof. And it is frankly insulting to the audience to take such a stand. But at least Kevin Kelly was there to push back.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that has possibilities. It could be, my hope is it's an invasion angle of some sort and that they don't screw it up. But, you know, it could just be what they're going to fill time with as Adam Cole's out with his ankle injury. I think, did somebody else suggest, might have been Kevin Kelly, that Andrade was the one who attacked Jay White, which would make sense since Jay White beat him on last week's Collision. So a little bit of furthering there. But mostly the show, you know, would rise or fall based on how it sold the pay-per-view.
So how did it sell the pay-per-view overall? You've talked about the quality of the show, which match will go last, Jim Ross's commentary. You're intrigued with something that has nothing to do with selling the pay-per-view, although there's a chance it'll be furthered or revealed at the pay-per-view. But do you think they ultimately did a good job selling more people on this show than those who are predisposed to, no matter what, order every pay-per-view that AEW puts on, or who saw Danielson, Zack Sabre in particular and said, you got my money? How did this show do by trying to expand beyond those two groups?
I don't think it did that well. The second hour was better at selling the pay-per-view than the first. Right around the time Omega and Jericho came out, right to the end, I thought most everything had to do with selling the pay-per-view in one way or another, all the promos and the matches. I think if you're the type of wrestling fan who you know, would know who Josh Barnett is, we got a Josh Barnett match added to the card tonight, whether we wanted it or not.
Well, they call it a, what was the phrase? Not a dream match, but a
dream match of sorts.
A dream match of sorts. I love that. Yeah. But we just slip this in on the pre-show. It's going to be a pre-show match. We're going to tell you about it now in a brief vignette, and we're not going to give you any context. I mean, it's just, but we're going to call it a dream match of sorts. It's a pre-match dream show. That was just.
Yeah, that was Kevin Kelly sort of a great insult that he has plausible deniability on. I think Josh Barnett is from the Seattle area, and he has Inoki ties.
Yeah.
You know,
either do it up or don't do it. Like, this is just such a waste.
I think my guess is the plan was Moxley was going to face Josh Barnett and then he got injured. Moxley has taken part in Josh Barnett's his indie show where they don't have any ropes.
Yeah.
Bloodsport, right? It's every year at WrestleMania they have a show. I watched it this year because Kota Ibushi was going to have a comeback match there. It felt like a total afterthought, absolutely. Theme of the show, it's the people who would, back when there were DVDs or Blu-rays, people who would watch all of the bonus features and know all of the lore, right?
I miss that stuff. Yeah,
the hardest of the hardcores. I was excited for the show, but, you know, not, you know, it's not Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior, you know, Hulk Hogan versus the Big Baddie, you know, type of marquee, you know.
Yeah.
Card. It looks great from a work rate perspective. I'm beyond excited for FTR and Aussie Open. They could have done a little bit more to build that up. I thought in the main event they hardly touched. And up and down the card, there are matches I'm looking forward to. So they already had my money, and they didn't do anything to lose my money, although I have not ordered the show yet. Just because, you know, I'll wait until 5 minutes before and then get caught up in the Bleacher Report errors and all that and be mad. But, what are your thoughts? Were you high on the show or not? I have not had a chance to read your review.
Yeah. I thought it was solid. I mean, I don't think it changed any minds, to be honest. And so I don't think it was like a great final sell, but it frankly just too late for that. But, you know, I say it's solid because I think the video packages, like you said, they do a stellar job with their, you know, their dedicated pre-show or a pay-per-view preview episode to follow Rampage. So, you know, it was solid. I mean, I think the only match they didn't – did they touch on Hangman and Swerve?
I don't
Other than mentioning
they,
it?
I don't think they focused on it. They did a lot on that Friday night preview, but I don't think they did tonight.
Yeah. So, but I think that's the only match, I guess, the four-way with the Guns and the Young Bucks and all that. I think that they didn't give any attention to, but I think every other match got something. So, you know, when I say solid, it's like it's solid in that sense. And I think closing, giving Zack Sabre 15 minutes of TV time to comment is good because a lot of people have no connection to him at all or beyond just hearing about him. AW obviously wants those people to buy the pay-per-view in addition to those who have been dedicated fans of his stellar work over the years. So giving him a chance to get his personality across a little bit, I think was good. I think it was good use of him when he was in town. I certainly would have done more the past couple of weeks, you know, building up a little bit more and not assuming that the audience they're hoping to attract in large numbers, dishing out $50 care who the best technical wrestler is inherently enough to spend $55 or whatever, you know, whatever. So, you know, I mean, it's just in a way it's too little too late, but given that it's too little too late, it was solid. And yeah, the vignettes were good. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't have like super, super strong or super negative feelings. I think this is kind of what I expected them to do. And they did, you know, they put effort into Omega and Jericho. You know, that's what stood out to me in terms of, oh, we're going to turn Jericho and Omega teaming together into something, an issue, have the, you know, the, of course, you know, oops, I knocked you off the ring apron moment that, you know, they didn't really play up beyond that, which is fine, but I'm not quite sure why they did it in the first place, but maybe it'll play itself out on the pay-per-view, but probably not. But we got, you know, a couple promos from Kenny Omega and Jericho before the match and after the match. So I'd say that was the strongest I would have liked to hear from Don Callis about this one last time. I think he's, you know, a guy, you're going to sell pay-per-views based on people wanting to see him get humiliated and set back. I also think they could have trimmed the Jericho Omega in-ring promo after their match a bit. I thought it kind of petered out in the end, you know, with Jericho kind of turning the focus to Sammy Guevara. So, I mean, nothing was great, but it was solid.
Yeah, I thought they had a missed opportunity in the Omega Jericho tag match to bring out Ibushi and Will Ospreay and you know, all of the participants and Don Callis. And, you know, they could have done a physical pull-apart brawl, but I guess they were saving that for the main event. They could have just done a standoff then, right? That's your other option in that situation is they all, six of them are nose-to-nose. They didn't do that. I wonder if Ospreay and Ibushi are on per-date deals and Tony didn't think it was worth it to pay them what's probably a decent fee for both of them to do a run-in the night before a pay-per-view that probably most people have already made up their minds on whether they're going to order. It was interesting that Omega and Jericho, you know, a lot of their heat they put on Callis, right, for their promo as opposed to Sammy and Takeshita. I guess there was a little bit from Jericho on Sammy, but yeah. Callis is the heat magnet and he's the heel manager, but he's not going to be the one getting in the ring. So it's it really is just rises and falls based on the intensity of your dislike for Callis, because Sammy and Takeshita are sort of just henchmen who are carrying out his will as opposed to, you know, as much independent actors, you know, with their own free will. So it's a choice. Not sure that's the best choice for Sammy and Takeshita, but Callis is just so over as a heel in that sort of Bobby Heenan 80s Heenan's Army taking on Hogan kind of way.
All right, well let's pause and introduce the show formally here, and then we'll get to calls and emails and do a little more previewing of tomorrow night's show with you, Eric. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, September 30th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. I host a variety of podcasts, some VIP exclusive, like Everything with Rich and Wade, The Fix with Todd Martin, Wade Keller Hotlines, Keller Conversations, and post pay-per-view and post PLE roundtables, which we'll be doing tomorrow night after WrestleDream, just for VIP members. Don't forget Greg Parks, PLE Torch columnist, will be hosting Wrestling Night in America tomorrow night after WrestleDream. So check that out for your live fix if you want to get participate in a live call-in show like this afterwards. We'll have the information on that in my report at pwtorch.com. At the top and bottom of the report, a link to the live stream, the phone number, and the email. It's different than this because it's Wrestling Night in America on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed, but we'll have full information so you can join the conversation after WrestleDream somewhere at 1, 2, 3 in the morning, whenever they get done with the event. Do you have an over-under, Eric, on how long the show runs?
It's 14 matches. I mean,
yeah.
They're going the full five, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that voice you just heard, the other voice you heard on the show so far is Eric Kroll. He is a former Pro Wrestling Torch columnist over 30 years ago and now back contributing to PW Torch in various ways with articles and co-hosting podcasts. Eric, great to have you here. I think this is your Collision Post Show debut.
It is. No significance to that whatsoever. But Wade Keller is the hardest working man in wrestling journalism. This is his fourth post show of the week, I believe, if I'm calculating that correctly.
A typical week.
Yeah. So that's that right there. He will have talked already even longer, even more than the hours of tomorrow night's pay-per-view.
That is. Well, I don't talk the whole time, but I throw to co-hosts and callers. But yes. So let's give out the phone number for tonight's show. You are welcome to call if you are live streaming us, and push 1 on your phone after you call, and that'll let you know. Let us know you want to be on the show, like Mike and Hendrick have already done. The number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on Collision tonight, your thoughts on WrestleDream hype, your thoughts on WrestleDream tomorrow night. Are you ordering it or are you not? Why or why not? And you can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Okay, let's get to it. Let's get to our calls. We'll start with Mike in Hershey, PA. Mike, thanks for calling. What's in your mind about Collision tonight?
Hey, Wade, Eric, good. Glad to be on the show tonight. I liked it. I liked the show. It was a fun Saturday night in front of the TV. I think you guys nailed it though, and I guess I'll answer your question right off the bat just to let you know where I'm coming from. I don't think I'll be ordering the show tomorrow. I just think it's I have to go to work on Monday morning, and you know, without like a world title match and you know, some of the big storylines that I'm into, you know, not really being resolved, you know, anticipating being resolved in the show, you know, I think I'll skip this one. But I'm interested in the results, but I won't be ordering WrestleDream tomorrow night.
What could have sold you? Is a guarantee, like 7 matches instead of 14? I mean, some of those aren't the pre-show, but still.
Well,
no, seriously, like if they just said, we're going to give you a 3.5-hour Dream show of 6 matches, and we're going to, again, I'm not trying to answer the question for you. Please don't think you have to abide by this. But if they had just spent the last 3 weeks focusing on 6 matches and building them and focusing on them, and every Collision, every Dynamite, you know, covered at least 5 of them in some form or fashion, and you knew what you were buying, would that be more a selling point, or is that actually detract? Because, well, you'd have to cut off half the card, and all the matches on the show are going to help make it great. Where are you on that?
I just think it's just not my kind of show. It's kind of like Forbidden Door. I'm just not – it's like a Forbidden Door show. It's just not my thing. I'd rather just be within the AEW world as opposed to the, you know, the New Japan stuff. So, I mean, some interesting matches in there, but, you know, some of the stuff, some of the players, I think you might find this funny. I have a 14-year-old daughter. She walked into the room, you know, as the show was ending, and Zack Sabre Jr., who is who's fantastic, by the way, but and I did enjoy him on commentary tonight, but he goes into the ring and he's standing there, you know, in Bryan Danielson's face, and my daughter said, is that Machine Gun Kelly? So I don't know. So that was kind of funny. He does actually kind of look, has a resemblance to him. And she's 14, so she likes his music and knows who he is. But, look, I'm intrigued by it, but I would prefer probably, you know, I am an AEW fan, and I do purchase some of the pay-per-views throughout the year, but this is one that I think I'll probably just try to catch some of the matches, you know, in the coming week on clips and things like that afterwards. It's just going to be on too late for me tomorrow night. It's just, and I'm just not that intrigued. Yeah.
Yeah. What else about tonight's collision stood out to you? Said it was a nice – I mean, I thought it was just a the I'm not quite sure why, but, like, Saturday night wrestling feels different than Wednesday night wrestling. And originally, you know, the show was very different. You know, you have different announcers, different opening theme. But it does sort of feel a little more relaxing. It's not on a work night, school night. And it does feel kind of fun to just settle in and have some good wrestling. And, you know, hopefully some good character development, something better than, you know, women yelling bitch at each other. And we mostly got that tonight. what stood out to you, Mike?
Yeah, well, exactly. First of all, just Saturday Night Wrestling is great. So it doesn't matter, AEW, WWE, if there's a show on Saturday night, that's we can actually have people, you know, friends over. We can, like, you know, relax, you know, whatever, have a couple of beers.
Yeah.
Wednesday is more... I'm kind of DVRing that and kind of fast forwarding and you know, catching what I can and then kind of catching up with you guys the next day. That's kind of my routine, you know, with Saturday night. You know, if I get the chance, if I'm not doing something, it's great sitting down and you know, and watching the show. But no, a couple of things. Wade, actually, you know, a few weeks ago, I caught my first AEW show live up in State College, Pennsylvania. And the one thing I will say is since seeing Collision live, I'm actually seeing the show, like the TV show, a lot differently now when I watch it on TV, because it is, I'm all about AEW. AEW is cool, but I understand they have challenges. You know, like that night where I was there, they had, you know, half the arena was completely empty. When I watch the show, there's a couple of things that stand out to me. You know, they only shoot everything that they're showing is from that vantage point of that hard side camera. And so, you know, you're getting a great view of the crowd and, you know, the ramp, both sides of the ramp are full. So you get some nice shots of that. But there's some points when you're watching the show where you're just wondering if they had people on the other side, if it was a full arena, it would actually be, it would be more entertaining, more natural. And one of the things that stood out to me tonight, you know, was during the Jericho Omega match, there was a distraction from Prince Nana, and basically because they couldn't shoot him from the, you know, if they shot him looking at his face, you would see this black hole in the background, right? So you see the back of his head, and I it's like you have no idea what he's actually doing. And it, when you understand why they're doing that from a production standpoint, it kind of takes away from it. So, you know, that's just one of the things. And I'm trying to think if there was another moment like that, but the only thing that I would say that I've noticed before that's similar to that is when there's a dive. So when there's like a dive out of the ring, it's always shot like this, you know, you can't see them diving out away from the ring into this. They're always diving towards, you know, it's like the cameraman has his back. So when you notice those little things, it's ever since I've seen it live, it kind of changed the way I watch the show.
Eric, what do you think about AEW's presentation now compared to that first night in D.C., you know, just packed crowd? Obviously, we had Wembley as another example. There's been fewer, and it's further in between, where there's just like a crowd and a night of AEW wrestling where you're like, this is a red-hot product, and these guys are stars. And, you know, I was watching Kenny and Jericho, and, you know, it's a really nice arena, but it's darkened and, you know, so many, in so many respects, it doesn't feel hot. And then, you know, you hear there's something in it, even if you're not thinking about it, there is that sort of hearing echoes in the building and you can kind of individually hear what wrestlers are saying or what fans are saying to the wrestlers. And it just doesn't have the same kind of major league. This is a happening product. As often, it doesn't greatly affect me consciously, but I think in the end, you know, I was thinking about it watching Jericho and Omega going, they don't feel like as big a stars as they would if the arena was lit up and there was a much bigger crowd. I mean, maybe it's just stating the obvious. How do you feel about that, Eric?
Well, they drew, according to WrestleTix's last report earlier today, they were going to draw about 4,200 tonight in a building that would hold about 18,000 for basketball, if Seattle had a basketball team. Sorry, Seattle, your team moved many years ago. So you would think you could get maybe 14,000, 13,000 in for wrestling, depending on the size of your Titantron. Pardon my out-of-date phraseology. And, you know, you got 4,000. So that does, as Mike pointed out, that does limit what you can shoot. WWE had the same problem a few years ago, probably pre-pandemic, before they got hot again. They were drawing about 5,000 people, you know, on average for a Raw or a SmackDown, and it because the product was cold, and they had to resort to the same thing. It just does generally feel, you know, SmackDown has had sellout after sellout and 10,000 plus crowd after 10,000 plus crowd. It just feels more big league when you can shoot the whole stadium and you can do the big long shot from up in the rafters showing, you know, it makes it feel like a big basketball game or a football game, a big sporting event. And AEW hasn't had that. And I think in wrestling is, I was thinking about that this week and what does that mean? Other than the tickets not in demand, and they've had to resort to two-for-ones and deep discounts and papering to get enough people in the building to even make it look this good for TV. So decreased attendance is usually the first sign of a cold promotion, right? And then the TV ratings, if they're going to fall, that happens later. Is that generally how it works, Wade?
What falls later? I didn't understand.
The first thing to fall, the canary in the coal mine, is the live attendance, and then the TV is more of a habit. I'm used to watching Raw on Monday nights, or I'm used to watching Dynamite.
Yeah, I think that's because TV's free and going to an arena takes effort.
Yeah, so if that's the case, I mean, AEW probably needs to be a little bit, you know, paying attention to whether their TV numbers start falling.
Mm-hmm.
Any more than they have compared to, you know, the hot period of a couple of years ago. And so that is cause for worry. I know you have advocated in the past, and I've made fun of you that over showing fans on the concourse. Well, I don't even think AEW has that option anymore. Even if they wanted to improve the presentation or change up the presentation by showing fans on the concourse, they'd be showing kind of empty concourses, which is not ideal for television.
Yeah. Mike, how do you feel about all that? Like, does it affect you week after week in terms of how you perceive the product right now?
You know, not really. I think it's just because I'm calling it pro wrestling post show podcast, right?
So I'm pretty much a big fan.
So I've been with it since I'm a little kid. But no, the one thing that came to my mind was Vincent from. The Righteous was coming down the ramp, and it was so quiet that you could you could hear him snapping his fingers like it was clear as day. And that's more than just having good microphones, I think, on the camera. I mean, it was pretty echoey in that moment.
I didn't think that, you know, the pop for Bryan Danielson, the whole main event lengthy match was built around Danielson getting a hot tag, and it wasn't the summer of Brian, you know. I mean, like they were, you know, chanting for his yes kick and stuff, but like you didn't get that hometown explosion. And Brian seemed to be working a little extra hard to try to get the crowd into it. A few seconds later, maybe picking up on that. It's not, you know, the crowd wasn't like going bonkers who were there. They were, you know, but they were cheering him. But it just didn't feel electric. So it happens on many levels. Go ahead, Eric.
How much of that is 4,000 people in a building, and how much of that is Seattle's kind of an odd place, like in terms of drawing and crowd reactions? I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, it's Danielson, and the whole match is both around his hot tag, and he hot tags in, and you know, crowd's kind of sitting there.
I think the 12 to me it was like 20 minutes, maybe the 10 to 12 minutes of beatdown of Wheeler Yuta killed the crowd.
Right.
Maybe I don't know. For me,
but that's the point. I mean, I get what you're saying there, but like that's actually a feature, not a flaw, in the formula of building a hot tag. Is bring the crowd down, milk the moment, boom, there's a hot tag, and they've rested during the beatdown, and now they just can't wait to see a flurry of offense from their favorite. I mean, that's by design. But yeah, I mean, whatever it wasn't, oh, this guy's red hot and over, and, you know, his match is going to sell pay-per-views. This is his hometown, and they're going crazy for him. It just didn't have that vibe. And I do think fans feed off each other. When you're in a, you know, gigantic building and everything is tarped off and darkened, I mean, it does bring the energy down too. You know, excitement and popping, or that's contagious too. So, you know, and I mean, it's tough to run back-to-back nights in the same market and, you know, you're going to have, it's a price you pay, but it's also the price AEW pays. And instead of the beginning of the announcement of Collision, AEW is going to pay a price because they're going to have to go to cities that don't draw as well, or go to towns that are drawing well twice as often. And it's going to hurt the TV product because they're going to have smaller crowds and burned out crowds. And, you know, it's like, speaking of Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson, when he was Daniel Bryan, he said nobody wants to be in the third hour of Raw because the crowd is dead by then. Everybody looks at that format sheet and hopes that their match is in the first hour and a half or 2 hours. And so, you know, wrestlers are cognizant of that. And anyway, I don't want to belabor that point, but yeah, it wasn't a red hot crowd going into a pay-per-view. And if you're trying to, you know, sell people on the idea that this show sells itself because everybody knows who Zack Sabre Jr. is, and everybody knows the Shibata backstory. And, you know, it's like, if you're going to do that, you want to be able to back that case up with at least a red hot crowd bigger than 4,200 people. Mike, back to you. Anything else?
Yeah, just two quick notes. So the first thing is, I think, first of all, Jericho, I think, did a great – I mean, it took a lot of prompting, but he got the crowd going during the match with a lot of arm – I don't know what you want to call it, trying to get the people going, you know, throughout the match, and they were pretty hot during moments of that match. I noticed some terminology that I just thought was kind of interesting, and I wanted to pass it by you guys just to – see if you thought that this was intentional or was just whether it was a shot across the bow or some sort of reaction. But during the Jericho Omega match versus Gates of Agony, the announcer mentioned that one of the Gates of Agony's fathers, was actually a tribal chief. They used the word tribal chief of, and that I found that interesting. And then the other part was the Chris Statlander promo where she called herself the defeater of the undefeated. So, and I think that was that was certainly reactionary to the news about Jade Cargill this week. So, guys, that's all I had. Thank you for the opportunity. Always loved calling in and appreciate the time.
Thanks, Mike. Good hearing from you. Call again. I would be surprised if Kevin Kelly and Nigel McGuinness do not know that Roman Reigns is the you know, what his catchphrase is as tribal chief, and they just said it. I could totally imagine that's possible, that they're just completely disconnected from the WWE product right now. Nigel, just out of, you know, that's my ex company, I don't want to watch, and Kevin Kelly, the next company, he doesn't watch. I mean, I don't know. Eric, where are you on Kevin Kelly? This was a better week for him in terms of his inflections. But he's still not naming names. You know, he doesn't know names of holds, which is so weird. How many submission holds and signature moves he just hasn't bothered to learn or can't recall as they're happening. And I mean, to me, that's, you know, one of the, like, that's sort of your job as play-by-play guy. He was in last place in our last I checked in our poll for your favorite AEW announcer, and I listed like eight of them. Where are you on him? Are you a booster, or do you think there's a drop off with New Japan, and if so, why?
So I am a huge fan of Kevin Kelly on New Japan. Like, he just tells the stories, and he's just fantastic. He's incredible on New Japan. So one of so he gets,
he is like, still in last place in our poll.
He gets a pass from me because I have such a reservoir of goodwill, from New Japan, that, you know, I'll give him some time to make the adjustment. Yeah. Now, that said, I think, How could you do better if you don't know the names of the moves in AEW? Well, you would do what he would do in New Japan. He'd go talk to the wrestlers. He would ask them what the names of the moves are. You know, you'd do some work. And my guess would be maybe that work hasn't been done.
Someone hand him a sheet of paper that has, this is the guy's finisher, and the plan is for him to use it. And it's basically this. You know, like, describe it in words if you can't, or have someone put together a little video just for him, or send him an email with links that show each wrestler's finishing move on YouTube. And then that should be what he does between now and next week. I mean, it's just
it's AEW, so there's not a lot of structure backstage.
I know. Well, I'm not going to point out.
Right? If Kevin Kelly is going to get a big paycheck to do this and allow him to quit New Japan, then Kevin Kelly needs to put in the work. And maybe now that he's not going to be going to Japan anymore after January, that he will put in that work, hopefully. I have a little bit of sympathy for not knowing the names of the moves, because I didn't watch wrestling regularly for about 15 years. And so when I came back, largely due to the Jericho Omega match in Japan at the Tokyo Dome, I didn't know the names of the moves. And still to this day, when I'm trying to thumb out at an arena on an iPhone, a report yeah. for you, I yeah. just say things like he used his finisher, because in the moment I can't tell, and I'm in an arena, so I can't really look up what the name of it is, right? It's hard because, you know,
yeah,
Wi-Fi.
Eric,
so I get it. I get not knowing the lack, but, you know.
But you have a different job. Like,
right.
That's, if, I will tell you this.
Not all the finisher.
If your job was to get over the names of wrestlers' finishing holds as part of your job description, and that was your sole job, you didn't work 40 hours Monday through Friday somewhere else and show up on weekends doing part-time wrestling announcing, that Monday through Friday, you should spend 40 hours learning the names of holds and your first week on the job. So, you know, it's just like, if you're not familiar with the product, get familiar with the product quickly and spend 1 week doing it. I mean, it's just you can learn it all in a week. If that is your job, that should be something you know by now. And there's not really an argument against naming the wrestling holds. I mean, it's not as bad as using pronouns throughout a match with a bunch of wrestlers who fans don't know really well, or using, you know, last names and not their full names. I mean, people give Vince McMahon a hard time for all his rules, but like, most of his rules are good, and some aren't, and the ones that aren't make the good rules seem bad by knee-jerk. But, you know, every chance you get, you should be naming the wrestlers by name, not pronouns, and you should get the key moves over by mentioning them every chance you get. Anyway, point made, yeah, Kevin Kelly, last place, 9%, but it's close. I mean, Jim Ross is 10%, Tony Schiavone, 11%, Ian Riccaboni, 13%. Taz getting close to first place. I thought he was going to win. He's at 18%, Excalibur at 20%, so... Nigel going pretty well at 70%, by the way. He's making a bit of a comeback. So, anyway, go to the poll section at pwtorch.com and vote. And maybe you can make a difference in who finishes first and last. All right, if you're joining us midstream, I don't know if NXT No Mercy just ended or not. I'm not watching it at all and avoiding spoilers, but it's possible it ended. We got some people who just called up and are on hold. But if you did watch Collision, or you just want to talk Wrestle Dream, consider yourself invited. 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1. All right, let's go to Hendrick in Portland next. Hendrick, thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Collision tonight?
I'm sitting in the basement of the Climate Change Arena right now.
Now, how did you end up in the basement? Did you know there's a wrestling show there?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sitting right by where it says authorized personnel only for the NHL. So this is where the Kraken come in. I tried to find the spot where I could actually talk to you the most. So
yeah, no,
this
that's
is
great.
Where I am.
Appreciate it. So we talked. You've heard us probably. If the reception's good in the basement. Although Climate Pledge. Oh, no, it is. It very much has a basement because isn't that the arena that's basically underground mostly?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm impressed with the reception. But Jeff Bezos should have good reception everywhere. He's got the money to make that happen. So what do you think of the energy in the crowd tonight? How did it come across in person?
Well, first of all, hey, Eric, nice to talk to you.
Hey.
You're someone I always like to listen to, so it's nice to be on the phone with you. But
why, thank you.
So, I don't know. This crowd was fine. I mean, it was definitely the lowest attended crowd I've seen in a long time. I was here in January, which was the first time AEW came here. That was when... They changed to the striking laser things for the new look or whatever. But it was also when Darby Allin beat Samoa Joe for the championship, and there was a lot more people there that time than this time.
I mentioned that Danielson pop for the hot tag that, you know, they built to. What was it like in the building? Were you surprised? Did it come across as like big and massive? It just didn't come across on TV to us, or did it seem a little muted? And were you surprised?
I guess at that point in time, it about right because of the amount of people that was in the building. So it didn't seem like, you know, there wasn't going to be a crazy amount of a response for anyone. But, I mean, Danielson, yeah. You know, you would hope he would have the biggest pop of the night, but, I mean, I guess he kind of did. I don't know. It was just kind of like, hey, we're here to help out this product. And I almost felt like like they felt bad for it at points in times.
What who got the biggest pops of the night?
I mean, for me, it was what I heard was Kenny Omega, which, you know, I mean, he doesn't have any ties here or whatever, but I mean, it's hard to see that guy. So if you can actually like get him like in the building and get him to wrestle, that's a big deal. So I would say Kenny Omega got the biggest pop.
And how about from there?
I mean, I would say probably Danielson after that, and then I don't know. I'm not really sure. There was some really dull moments.
Talk about the dull moments. What category? What do you categorize as dull moments?
I'd say like so when there was Andrade match, that was about as dull as it got. Like, and then the Kingdom.
Wow.
Like, it was just like they were waiting for stars, but they never got the stars. And then when they finally got them, it was like, okay, good enough.
I thought by the way the Juice Andrade match was like one of the highlights of the show. I just thought that was a really good match. Eric, what did you think of that?
Yeah, in my notes I'm like, wow, this was much better than I expected.
Yeah, Andrade Juice came to work and Juice had one like the, I don't say the match of his career, but maybe his best AEW match. Maybe that is the match of his career. I don't know.
Yeah, it you know, it had nothing to do with the pay-per-view, so it was more used to bring up the end of the cliffhanger ending of Dynamite, but the match definitely exceeded expectations. They could have just phoned it in the night before a pay-per-view, but they put their working boots on, so good for them.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, we had the Kingdom of the Best Friends with their wiener jokes and just, you know, just a dork fest of a match. And then, you know.
That makes me mad. When I saw that, I was just like, oh, my God. You know, like, really, Wiener blast, like get real, like, yeah. you're on national television, like, fucking do something good. Sorry.
It's one of those things where I just think it the eye roll is so big it can turn some people off. But you know, between the Melvin thing that, you know, Taven keeps doing and Bennett, Eric, does that, I just haven't thought the Best Friends gimmick has benefited AEW from the beginning. You know, give the people what they want. It's just like, oh, God, what a bunch of dorks.
I mean, I'd have to say the high point of the Best Friends AEW run was when they had that pandemic-era parking lot brawl with Santana and Ortiz that I think one wrestling publication that will go unnamed, not the Torch, might have given 5 stars to. Yeah. It was good, right? That was sort of their high point, and then since then it's just been they're basically a babyface jobber tag team, you know, gatekeeper tag team to put the heels over. The Kingdom, not my cup of tea. I guess the thing I would say, at least they're trying to give them some wins on AEW television, at least since they're part of the MJF Adam Cole, I guess, main event storyline, right? I'm MJF's champion, so he's the main event storyline, or should be. I just don't care about either the Kingdom or Best Friends. So kind of that's why I said the second hour was better than the first.
Yeah.
Boosting the pay-per-view.
I mean, you know, and I mean, Jericho and Omega against Gates of Agony, it was fine, you know, but it's like you're watching Omega sell to two wrestlers who are not pushed or established, you know, with most AEW viewers. I don't think they could tell you who Khan or Leona is and what their backstory is. And Prince Nana just sings the dorky song and about money. But there's not character development. They're not a threatening tag team. There's nothing at stake. And Omega selling a bunch of the match. And then you got the Righteous winning a quick squash. So, and then, you know, nearly 20-minute main event. I don't know. I mean, Juice and Andrade stood out to me. It's like, I thought they bookended the show with, you know, good matches, but best match was this 13-minute, tight, hard-hitting, high-energy brawl with, you know, Juice playing up his character in a way that is, you know, I'm not against, like, goofy characters, but there comes a point where it's just so, like, dorky, indie, immature, in-joke, yeah. Self-satisfied, you know, smugly self-satisfied, bad, grade school humor, and that's what David invented and the Best Friends were doing. So, and what Chuck usually, I mean, anyway, I don't want to rant too much. I mean, I would steer things in a different direction where Tony Khan. I think it reflects badly on the ability to take anything else on the product seriously, and I think it just shows bad judgment. But that's my opinion, and maybe Tony Khan has stats to back up that people are delighted with what they do and their hugs and all that indie-rific stuff. Eric, do you have a question for Hendrick?
Are you going to tomorrow night's pay-per-view?
Oh, yeah. I'll definitely be there. I mean, this is funny. Like, this was one of the last collision shows that was actually during the time when CM Punk was here. So these tickets went on sale right before All In, the London All In. So it was kind of funny that, you know, this is the last gasp of people that could possibly want to buy a ticket for CM Punk, but that I did not see any whatsoever. I will definitely be there tomorrow and here tomorrow. And
Hendrick, what are you most looking forward to on that show? Like what if you hadn't bought a ticket yet but decided to, like, what would be the match or matches that get you?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of a New Japan weirdo, and I've never actually seen Shibata wrestle. So, like, him versus Eddie Kingston was the main reason I'm here. But besides that, I mean, Danielson versus Saber is going to be great. I mean, there's basically no way they can lose on that one. So that's why I'm here, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Eric, do you have a question for Hendrick and his in arena experience?
did anybody in the arena react when they announced Josh Barnett versus Claudio for the pay-per-view pre-show?
I did, but I think I was the only one.
Funny.
I mean, you know, I was a fan of, you know, of what he's done in MMA, and, you know, he did, I don't know. To me, I mean, I think that was definitely supposed to be for Mox, but it is what it is. But, I'm looking forward to seeing them more.
Was there anything else on the show besides what aired on TV? Anything before and after? And did Tony Khan in particular make an appearance for the crowd?
Well, Tony Khan came out definitely right before. If you can hear, they're still doing Ring of Honor right now. But at the beginning, it was kind of heartwarming, maybe in kind of a weird way, where it was like, Like, we love you, Tony. You're trying your best, but this is not good enough. But we're still gonna applaud you. Like, and like, there's definitely no negativity with Tony Khan whatsoever. And when he came out and he was just like, thank you for coming, you know, same kind of deal he kind of does for every show, but it kind of felt like a little more heartwarming, where he was just like, I'm trying my best. I don't even know how to describe it, but but it was good. Like, nothing but positive to Tony Khan, which I'm glad.
Eric, anything else you want to ask, Andrew?
It's just a contrast to the last time I saw Tony Khan live, which was the Collision the night before, All Out, and he was getting booed for, you know. He pulled his chair out and told us why he fired CM Punk. So I think AEW has been better in that all of the focus has been on the, for the most part, you know, with the Jade Cargill exception of her leaving, most of the focus and headlines have been about the storylines and is Edge coming in, as opposed to CM Punk backstage drama. So the promotion's doing better, you know, even if not maybe at the box office for live attendance, just because of the addition by subtraction they did with Punk, you know, a month later. I think that's fairly obvious.
Hendrick, totally. What'd you think of Julia Hart's entrance? And it's, you know, it's kind of low energy, but it's, you know, meant to be spooky and mysterious. The Righteous kind of have a different vibe. Don Callis has a different vibe. There's, you know, I mean, I'm not super into analyzing entrance music a lot, but I think it's important and notable, and it sets the tone for the talent and the match, but also for the energy level in the crowd. So I'm kind of curious, did you think the Julia Hart ring entrance worked? Because they put a lot into it. I'm not even drawing a conclusion myself when I asked it. I'm just genuinely curious what it was like in the building for her, because I think she's coming along and seeming more believable in her role and getting better in the ring, and she's so young, as Tony Khan talked about in the media Q&A last week or earlier this week. So yeah, just what were your thoughts on her? Did she seem like a star, or was the crowd, you know, dead for it?
No, definitely not dead. Like, and I really appreciate like what she's done character wise. Like, I mean, she was like just a random cheerleader, which was what she was in real life, and then she got into the House of Black, and she's really, took hold of this character, and it was appreciated. It wasn't like a boring, like, go to the bathroom type deal. It was like, we appreciate you. I mean, for the little amount of people that were here, I mean, they're into her, and I'm into her too. I think she's done a great job, honestly.
Very good. Hendrick, is there anything else you want to share with us?
Well, I just want to warn Eric that your good friend Hangman Page is probably going to get booed out of the building tomorrow. And it's going to be Swerve's house. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know what storyline they're going for or whatever, but it's definitely going to be Swerve's house.
There are few bigger fans of Hangman Page than I, but I want Swerve to go over because I just think he's he'd be a fresh person to inject as a TV challenger, maybe even a pay-per-view challenger at Full Gear. So I'll be rooting for Swerve to get the win tomorrow.
Wow. I didn't expect that. But,
Eric hey. can be objective.
All right, well, hey, I mean, I think Swerve deserves the win as well. I mean, it's a long time coming. So.
All right. Edward,
well,
thanks,
guys.
Thanks for on in. Go catch them up. If anything super notable happens, if you go back in the arena for ROH, let us know.
All right, we'll do.
Sounds good. That might be an oxymoron. Super important. ROH in the same thing.
Yeah, they're those things are torture, man. The ROH tapings after collision, oof, after two of them. Just brutal.
Yeah. All right, if you want to jump on the phone lines, we do not have anyone else who's pushed once, so you can join the conversation if you wish, 347-215-8558. If you are already on hold and you want to join, push one, and that'll flag you on the switchboard. I want to go to Zahn's email next. He emailed wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. An off-the-beat question here, but we haven't brought up Tony Storm yet or RJ City, and Zahn does. How do you? Good evening, Wade and Eric. How do you feel about RJ City? I think his interview style and approach should be used more often on AWTV. He did a great podcast spot with Rich Fan for The Torch this year, too. I didn't really get RJ City at first in AEW. You know, they just sort of put him on TV like, hey, y'all know who he is because he did this and this and social media or YouTube or whatever. Like, they didn't tell you. They just sort of put him on there, and the vibe was more interloper than professional interviewer who knows wrestling well. And that I think they did a poor job with him because it just felt like, oh, here's a hanger on who's we're gonna put on TV because we should. And he's grown on me, and I think his interaction with Tony Storm tonight was a lot of fun. I don't think anyone has been more convincing that he wasn't coming on to someone than RJ was to Tony Storm. And then she, of course, got angry by that and was offended, even though she was offended by him coming on to her. You can't win, cause she was offended that he wasn't and just made it seem like that never crossed his mind. I don't know how much that translates. Like, I don't know that he should just be the regular guy always interviewing people, but I'm not sure he shouldn't either. There's a distinct personality there with him that's different. I'm pretty convinced, like, Alex Marvez isn't good in this role. He's just not on camera smooth or effective, and it's kind of distracting. I don't say that with any malice. I've known Alex for 35 years, but I just don't think being the interviewer and his acting is terrible, and he doesn't carry himself with much dignity, although it's been better lately. But RJ, just there's a charm and an energy and exuberance is overstating it, but there's a sort of a joy of what he's doing that he brings to it, and then just a knowledge and a professionalism and a smoothness. So I'm still not 100% sure how to use him, but I did enjoy him with Tony Storm in these segments, and maybe they can build on that. Eric, where are you on RJ?
I have mixed feelings about him. I like him on Twitter, right? Seems to be a funny guy. I actually listened to the Rich Fan podcast and remember it. It was about as niche as you get, the podcast, but it was funny, right? They're both
that's Rich.
They were both witty.
Yeah.
I don't like RJ City on the pre-show because I think the goal of a pre-show should be to sell the pay-per-view. And truthfully, I'd rather have matches than RJ City on the pre-show.
What does RJ do that doesn't sell the show?
He's just not super serious. He's shticky.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I thought you were getting at, yeah.
Maybe more attention on himself than the matches, trying to get himself over more than the matches. The Tony Storm thing, it's weird because I should hate that, right? But it's so bizarre. Like, it's shticky and it's WWE, but it's so weird and different than anything else on wrestling television that I'm sort of just... I don't want to say like a train wreck, but like I can't look away. Like, I'm interested to see it every week. I don't want to fast forward or flip the channel. I think RJ City, if I'm not mistaken, is working with Tony Storm on this particular gimmick and maybe this helping produce the skits. I think I've read that somewhere. And it would, you know, you'd need a deep knowledge of like 40s, 50s Hollywood, which I think RJ probably has, old timey movie stars, to pull this off. And Tony Storm is just going for it so much that it shouldn't really work. Like, I can't stand the MJF that skit Wednesday with MJF and Adam Cole fishing and they catch the Big Show, right? Captain Insano. I hated that. Like, I was mad at it. I hated it so much. The Tony Storm thing is sort of like similar, but yet I just have a little bit of a soft spot for it. And I don't know why. I think Tony Storm is just going for it in such a major way. I don't know what that's going to do to her when she tries to not do that gimmick anymore, but
she might never snap out of it.
Yeah, it certainly would be a choice. I don't know how, you know, does it have legs? How far can you take this? who knows? They've dragged out this Bloodline storyline for 3.5 years in WWE, and it was boring until Sami Zayn got involved. So, you know, anything's possible in wrestling today.
Yeah, you got to get your Bloodline dig in. All right. Also, number two, what do you think about Tony Khan's choice to put Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho on Collision this week instead of Dynamite? I'd say could be a good way to get last-minute pay-per-view buys and help with the show's ratings. Not sure how it helps with the show's ratings. I mean, I guess, you know, oh, Kenny and Jericho are in the ring. Everyone tune in. But I'm not quite sure that's like The Rock on SmackDown with a million people tuning in for that. But I guess I just wish they would have told this story over more weeks and done more. I thought the first backstage interview with Omega was like, where's he been for the last 4 years, 3 years? Like, just pedestrian, ordinary promos where you just are connecting with the audience, just talking about the match and seeming like you're invested in your situation and what's coming up next and allowing people to get to know you. I mean, Omega has ridden this wave of best bout machine and, you know, kind of like Kevin Kelly coming in and, well, that's a bad comparison because Kelly sucked and Omega is really good at wrestling and was from the beginning and has worked through injuries that, you know, in retrospect, it's even more admirable what he's been able to do in the ring. But he hasn't been like that centerpiece personality and he hasn't developed into one and he needed reps and he needed to connect with a whole new audience. And like so many of AEW's star, you know, kind of non-XWWE stars, there was sort of a lack of a realization that, like, they're on national cable now, and this company needs more fans than they already have, and they need to act like they haven't arrived, but they've got a lot to prove and a whole new fan base to build. And I've never sensed that with Kenny. I've never sensed it's crossed his mind. I've sensed that he thought, you know, he was a legend. It's made, and everyone should do the work to point eyeballs at him. And finally, like, tonight, it's the most pedestrian, basic thing he's ever done in AEW, probably. It wasn't goofy. It wasn't distinctive. It wasn't meta. It wasn't inside jokey, but it worked for me. And I liked it. And I just want more of that from same thing from the Bucks and same thing from Hangman. Just give these regulars, these AW originals, so to speak, a chance, just do basic stuff. It's like going to the gym and just doing arm curls and bench presses. Like you just do it because it pays off over time, not instantly. And they should be doing that more often. Probably nobody else thought that watching Kenny than me, but it struck me as like, he should be doing that every week and just connecting with the fans about what his storyline is. But I grew up with that style of wrestling and I know it can work. And I know people will look forward to hearing from their favorites every week in an interview that doesn't have to be a 12-minute production with a ring entrance and standing in the middle of the ring. Eric, any thoughts on that?
Your sort of AEW long dislike of the Elite has always confounded me. I mean, is there room for
Eric,
improvement?
I'm going to cut
is
you out.
Is there room for improvement?
No.
Yes. It's just not your cup of tea, and that's fine.
No. But don't frame it as dislike. I want the merits of my argument to be what you respond to, not make it sound personal, because it's not. There's people I like who I criticize, and there's people I don't like who I praise, and I actually take offense to that phrasing, and you are better with words than that.
Well, dislike of the Elite's act. You know, I don't think anything I said means it's personal. Like, you don't like Tyson Smith or whatever.
Well,
when
you say your dislike of them makes it seem like I'm fishing for ways to bury them without merit. And I just think I made an argument for, you know, a couple minutes that pointed out, I think Kenny could have created a larger fan base by putting in the work and compared it to doing bench presses and curls. It's not exciting, but it's what wrestlers who want to expand their audience do to connect with the crowd. Respond to that, not a broad generalization that I think is inaccurate, that I don't like them. I'm being critical of how they haven't grown.
All I was trying to get across is I think you are a lot lower on the Elite, Kenny and the Bucks, than most people in wrestling, I would say.
I think most people in wrestling have coddled them to the point that they have failed to expand their audience so that their immense talent and marketability can be fully realized. I am probably a bigger fan of them than the people who think are settling for their mediocre effort for 3 years, other than when they put on a big match every few months.
I don't disagree that the Kenny certainly could have had room for improvement. The Kenny I wanted existed for maybe 2 or 3 weeks right after he won the belt from Moxley and Callis turned, and they were doing what was called the Heenan-Bockwinkle team. And then that just sort of disappeared. I prefer serious Kenny to the total goofball that I see on BTE where he's drinking liquid out of a Pepsi bottle the week after CM Punk is fired, and that becomes a minor blip on wrestling social media, and his goofiness. I certainly prefer that. I preferred, you know, you notice the better Kenny promo was the pre-tape, and the one that was a little rougher was the one in the ring. And I guess if we were suggesting Kevin Kelly should work on learning what the moves are, mm-hmm. perhaps, you know, Kenny and the Bucks could have figured out 4 years into how to do a better live promo.
Why do you hate them so much, Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did like that Jericho was making, and Kenny, I think, too. Jericho in the pre-tape and Kenny in the ring, they were making fun of – I mean, Jericho literally said, can they coexist, right? They were sort of taking apart that trope a little bit, I thought.
Yeah.
We're not here for a long time. We're here for a good time, right? We're not here to win the tag belts. We're just here because we both hate Don Callis. It's good to have – clearly signal your motivations, right? And cover for the fact that they have, you know, been in a feud for all of, you know, even before AEW started, when they were, you know, in early January 2018 at the Tokyo Dome. So where were we? Were we talking?
So no, I like
what
that
was
too.
The question? What was?
Well, I'll comment on what you just said first. Kenny saying we're not friends. That's not what this is about. This is about us having a common enemy in Don Callis. Again, I wish that's a story that they told for the last 3-4 weeks. Like, I think they could have really covered that, where you can like both guys if you're a fan of Kenny and a fan of Chris. You don't even have to choose – you don't choose sides between them, but they're coexisting in a leery way, knowing, hey, we're different people. We're not – you know, what did – Kenny was a little too cutesy about, like, he's not going to invite me to his birthday party or something like that. But that's Kenny, you know, and if he had done reps for 4 years, he'd be better at that now and have refined his character a little bit better. But the point was there, which is we're not going to be best friends. You aren't going to find us hanging out, you know, after the show at IHOP. But we have a common enemy, and we're talented, and we're professionals. And it doesn't even have to portend a turn. Like, you can actually do that and have it be one of those exceptions that doesn't lead to them a breakup or some, you know, silly misunderstanding that, you know, nobody buys is real. And they just do coexist for a common purpose, and it works. You know, I mean, I thought it was a little silly when they did a double team spot and they looked at each other like, whoa, we were able to execute a suplex together and not turn on each other. I thought that was a little overplayed in kind of a corny way, but that is the story they're telling. I think they could have told that a little bit better, but, you know, it is pro wrestling and things are sometimes overacted, but I still think dialing that down slightly would have been better. Let us figure it out. Don't just throw it in our face and in a cheesy way. But it's a good story to tell, and yeah. But I mean, I had high hopes. The first time I ever heard anyone compare Kenny and Callis to Bockwinkel and Heenan was me bringing it up to Tony Schiavone when I interviewed him before on the show before that. And I don't think Tony is super familiar with Bockwinkel actually, which is a little surprising. But yeah, I had high hopes for them, and I thought that was good. But I want Kenny to be. You can be a goof behind the scenes. Doesn't mean you have to be a weirdo goof on the air. Be the legend and carry yourself with, you know, a little more Lou Thesz and a little less Miz. I don't know. I just said Miz and Kenny and same sentence. I was trying to think of a better example. But, you know, just carry yourself like you want to be taken seriously and that you're a serious person. And Kenny just doesn't often come across as a serious person. And I think people who give him a pass because they like how many stars he gives them on big matches are not serving him as well. Somebody like me who has been consistently critical because he's been consistently underperforming at expanding AEW's audience with his talents.
Fat lot of good that's done in these 4 years, Wade. You're still saying the same thing, I guess. Yeah,
I'm not
years in, and he hasn't changed. So
I'm not my job performance is not based on whether I am effectively causing change. The integrity of what I do is based upon not giving up and just letting something get baked in as inevitable and calling it out. You know, regardless of whether it's been going on for 4 years or 2 weeks.
Tomorrow there's a 6-man tag. That'll add Ibushi to the face side and Ospreay to the heel side. And I'm scratching my head at what the finish is. Omega has lost twice to Takeshita to get him over. So you don't want Omega to lose again, probably. And you don't want Takeshita to take the fall because you've just spent time having him win, you know, to get 2 wins over Omega. Jericho is forever losing. Osprey's not losing because, you know, he's in New Japan. They probably come into AEW next year. You would think Sammy might be the one to take the fall, except he just turned, and you almost need to have him win the fall to sort of, if you're trying to establish him at a higher level and not just pin eater for the Don Callis family, you know, have him win or at least not take the fall. So I'm looking at my former, you know, heart eye emoji guy, Kota Ibushi, who just has been underwhelming in his return after, you know, nearly 2 years off. Ibushi should lose, and Ibushi should put younger wrestlers in AEW over, especially probably for how much they're paying him. But in a six-man tag, is that the best use of this, you know, special attraction star? I don't know. What do you think the finish is? Who scores the win and who takes the fall?
Yeah, I was reading Javier Machado's pay-per-view primer on pwtorch.com. Everybody check it out. Javier does a great job with these. And his prediction was the Callis family should win this to solidify their presence at the top of the card. You know, they drew attention to Omega losing and two matches to two of these men. Do you just have him lose to the third and make that a story and try to get Sammy more over and let Sammy have a breaking point that he won't shut up about, kind of like, you know, Jericho beating The Rock and Steve Austin one night?
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't – I like Sammy the least out of these six wrestlers, so yeah. I'm all for him looking at the lights, but I don't think that's best for business if you have
plans
to establish him. And I have to think you put him with Don Callis because Don can talk for him, right? Not that – Sammy's a better promo as a heel than a face, but still not, you know, A-level promo at this point in his career. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the finish is. Wait, when they – in that – singles match, Jericho pins Sammy, right?
Yeah.
I believe at Arthur Ashe. So then that would dictate 50-50 booking would dictate Sammy gets the win over Jericho. Maybe Jericho's protected with help from, you know, Don Callis and the screwdriver or whatever it is. So maybe that's the way they'll go.
What do you think of the screwdriver as a weapon? Like, why not make it like a cordless electric drill and just gouge people's eyeballs out? I mean, if you're going to use a screwdriver, why stop there?
It's like Triple H's sledgehammer back in the day, right? You can't actually use a sledgehammer because you'll kill somebody. You can't actually stab someone through their skull with a screwdriver because you'll kill them. I guess what I like about it the most is that there's been a consistency to it going back almost a year now when the screwdriver was introduced in the Lucha Brothers versus Elite six-man series after the Elite came back from their suspension following Brawl Out. So I guess I like that AEW has followed through on something and kept it consistent for this long of a period of time, even if the actual weapon might not be the most believable. But, you know, wrestling has a long history of unbelievable weapons. Like, I assume Abdullah the Butcher wasn't actually stabbing people with a fork in the 70s. Maybe he was, and that's why they were bleeding, but I assume that they would, you know, he wasn't really stabbing him
but
with a fork.
But even a fork, you're like, stop doing, if you're the promoter, you're like, stop doing that, Abdullah. But if you introduce a screwdriver, it's like, okay, no one buys it, because it's just like, that would gore someone. It's just like, I don't know. And his sledgehammer is a good example. I mean, you know, he'd wind up to swing it, and you know he wasn't going to swing it because it would be, you know, someone said it would explode like a watermelon. So he'd always have to jab people with the butt of it, with his hand covering it. And so anytime he wound up to swing it, it's like, you expect me to care? I know it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So stop pretending that's a dramatic moment when you never use it that way. With a screwdriver, it's just like, we know, like, there's no way Tony Khan would let that happen. If this, like, you just have to have some sort of internal idea, if you're Tony Khan, of what you as the face of the company promoter would tolerate and allow. And there should be some, like, logical parameters of what would get someone fired. And it should be things that are so outside the bounds of the stipulation of the match. And things that are deadly that you'd get arrested for. Well, there's a lot that happens in wrestling ring that you get arrested for. So that's maybe not the best example. But Yeah, it just seems silly. It's just like, hey, no one's ever thought of using a screwdriver before. No, a lot of people have thought of it. They just realize it's a dumb thing to introduce into wrestling because it's not believable that that would be something you should get away with using time after time. So just because no one's done it before doesn't mean you're a genius for thinking of it. It's maybe a lot of smart people decided against it.
Where were you on Hangman Page stabbing Swerve with the pen on Wednesday's Dynamite?
I wouldn't have included it because it felt like more of a distraction. But it's not, you know, the same thing. But, I mean, a lot of nerve endings in hands, and his hand should have just been, like, stuck to the mat. But if it was, like, you know, this plastic pen, and it sort of broke when he stabbed him, and it just hurt and punctured the skin a little. I mean, I can buy into that more. But, you know, sometimes it's just, yeah, they do things for, like, the sugar rush shock value, and they don't think about the ramifications. Same thing with, you know, I'm going to kill you. It's like, no, you're not. So stop saying things you're not going to do, because now you've said something you're not going to do. As, you know, Scott Hall told me that in a Torch Talk once, and it just stuck with me, and I refer to it a lot. He's like, no, you're not. So don't say things you're not going to do. It doesn't help sell the match. It makes you look like it sets the bar so high. Now we know you're not going to do what you promised. And people go, oh, it's just figurative. Well, yeah, but be more artful. Your job is to sell a match, not by using the most exaggerated, violent terms you can, but to say something that feels believable enough, it resonates with fans and makes them fear for it. She got on El Casey when he was fighting, speaking to Nick Bockwinkel, and turned Bockwinkel temporarily babyface. He didn't threaten to behead Nick Bockwinkel after he beat him, because no one believed that was going to happen. He said he was going to take the title back to the Middle East. And people feared that would happen. I did. So say things that are believable and scary. Don't say things that are not going to happen as a desperate, hacky way to try to sell a match. And I see the screwdriver is kind of hacky.
10-year-old Wade was such a mark.
Oh, the sheet. I seriously, he's scared. His facial expressions, I've never been more scared as a fan than the now late Sheik Adnan LKC when he first came in and he did the octopus, the abdominal stretch where he'd lift up on the leg also. And I, man, yeah. Oh. All right, I don't want to have nightmares. Back to Azan. Number three, I feel good about tomorrow's pay-per-view after watching tonight, but one thing bugs me. And all AW fans, why the Righteous? The Kingdom was right there and fit the story so much better. So I've answered this before, in different podcast scenarios. They have bigger plans for the Kingdom. The Righteous are there to just be on a card with tons of matches. And I think we have to wait, you know, at least a couple weeks before we see things, but they're not ready to do a bluff. There's a particular reason they want the Righteous, probably to win under these circumstances and take the belts out of the picture, and they want the Kingdom to stay on AEW proper and feud with them, and they don't want the belts to be in the mix. So the Righteous get a prominent position for a few weeks on AEW TV, take the belts back to ROH, and then the Kingdom can be in a longer-term, more significant feud after the fact. That's my thinking, Eric.
I assume MJF retains, because otherwise your world champion is losing to, like, two guys who are, like, ROH, you know.
But it depends on the content. And I get that. I'm not ruling it out by any means. I could totally see the story continuing with MJF with the belts. But this to me, and I've heard the counter-argument, but I think this to me feels like the escape hatch to get those damn belts off of ROH and Cole, since Cole is going to be out of action for a while, and MJF's a world champion, and it doesn't make sense for him to keep the title. And so in a two-on-one match where perhaps the Kingdom get involved, obviously, if you're going to have your world champion win secondary tag team titles, and then your partner gets hurt, you might have to do something you wouldn't have wanted to do in order to get the belts off of him. But I just don't think he should be carrying around half of the ROH tag belts. No, he could retain the title, and Tony Khan just announces, hey, your partner's out of action. We're going to have a tournament. Maybe it's happening right now at Climate Pledge Arena. Well, it wouldn't happen yet. That'd be spoiling things. It'd be whatever. But maybe soon. So maybe MJF retains and they do it. And he just relinquishes the belts, or Tony takes them off him because Cole's injured. And that is an escape hatch too. But I don't really think there's shame in MJF losing as long as there's a bunch of shenanigans and you know, screwdrivers to the eyeballs.
Yeah, I think it's either the belts are vacated or MJF retains somehow. Adam Cole shows up and uses his crotch or, you know, whatever it is.
Right, yeah.
They had a change. I would imagine they had a change booking plan since Adam Cole's ankle. But, yeah. I'm just irritated that we're spending as much time discussing an angle I just can't stand in MJF and Cole. And I realize I'm in the minority, right? Because what's over is over. Although, you know, AEW, it's not exactly burning up the box office for AEW, the MJF.
That's the thing. You should not apologize for your opinion. A, because you're allowed to like or dislike things that other people feel the opposite of. I mean, it's personal taste. So,
right.
You know, no one should apologize for not liking something that's majority like. That's just silly. That's, you know, you wouldn't, if that was music, we'd all be listening to crap. So not all crap, but a lot of crap, a lot of mass market crap. So I think the idea with the storyline is sort of how I feel about This Is Awesome chant. I think when you get a This Is Awesome chant 14 minutes into a match, it's the crowd, one, the inertia of I'm at a show and I'm watching a good match and I want to chant This Is Awesome because I'm complimenting the wrestlers, and it's our way of, you know, saying bravo at a play or encore at a concert. It's like, no, you should be wrapped up in the emotions of it, where you're cheering for someone to win and booing and rooting for someone to lose and emotionally wrapped up in it and not thinking about match quality. I can't put it all on the wrestlers. This is 20 years in the making of, you know, promoters playing to a smaller and smaller slice of the audience instead of, you know, our pro wrestling at its highest art form, which is getting you to buy in the moment the way that we do when we watch a great movie or a great TV series. We're not thinking about Emmy Award performance, at least not too often. We're wrapped up in who are they going to kill off, or who's going to win this battle for power, or is this person going to stay with this person or cheat on this person or divorce, whatever the scenario is. You want to be so immersed in it, you're not sitting here going, great acting, great script writing. And so my point is that This Is Awesome chant is not necessarily a sign of success. It's the reaction to a poorly promoted show that the fans are liking for the wrong reasons that ultimately doesn't draw as well as other ways of putting pro wrestling in front of an audience to sell tickets. And that's the problem with like the kangaroo kick, is it's over, crowds are reacting to it, but it's not the type of reaction that maximizes MJF's ability to sell tickets. It's a smaller crowd popping for something frivolous and fun. And maybe you do that on the undercard, maybe you don't, but there's a lot more money to be made with MJF doing more serious things and not Cole, you know, Adam Cole, you know, going, what the F, when MJF says he's driving his dad's boat that he took out without his permission and overacting. I mean, it's like the original Batman series where it's just add sound effects if you're going to do that and throw in the towel and draw in 10,000 people regularly.
I did very much like your historical arc analysis bit of this is the culmination of 20 years of, you know, promoters and pandering to fans with crowd participation and that kind of thing. I definitely appreciated the Batman TV series reference, since that was on syndication when I was a kid. I'm not so old that I was alive when it was on first run TV, nor are you, as far as I know.
No. Or the same age, so if you weren't, I weren't. I'm not.
Yeah. I bring up that I don't like the MJF Cole storyline, and I acknowledge that many people do, because I feel like if I don't acknowledge that it's over in the building and that, you know, the majority of fans seem to like it, I feel like I lose credibility as a critic and an analyst, right, for not, you know, what are you talking about? This thing is clearly over. Yes, it's over, but, right, my opinion is I don't like it. And I generally – you know, there's the Terry Funk school of thought, I think, the what's over is over, right? What gets over is over. And so I tend to be a little less stringent than some on that, but I just don't like this, right? I'm not as much of a stickler of like Todd Martin from The Fix, where, you know, it has to be realistic 24/7. I guess I'm just more of a work rate guy at heart, right? I like a good story, but I do work rate probably is the most important thing to me as a fan these days, which is probably why I'm higher on Wrestle Dream than your average fan will be. I think if they do 100,000 buys, it'll be a success. I'm not sure they'll do that.
Yeah. Scott's in attendance tonight. Also, he said, we're about an hour into the ROH taping. A decent amount of the crowd has stuck around. However, the crowd was only about half the size when Dynamite was in Seattle in January. The upper deck curtained off. No one on the hard cam side. And the one merch stand has an insane line as usual. Have a great night. One merch stand.
Yeah. At the All Out weekend, they did, which was at the United Center, they did the Wednesday Dynamite out in Hoffman Estates, where the first All In was and where All Out used to be until this year. they had one merch stand, but given that they only had about slightly over 3,000 people, I think, in the building, it wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, I guess they're doing it to justify, which again, is always weird because of the direct, you know, the way AEW gets dismissed as a T-shirt company. They're not actually that good at selling T-shirts, ironically.
Yeah, yeah. Is Tony Khan thinking small ball, or is it passive aggressive against the Bucks in a way that he's doesn't even realize, or what? Yeah, it does seem strange. David Bryant, who does the PW Torch.com hits and misses on Collision message, and said that there is no amount of interference that would not make MJF look weak if he loses those titles. He is, in theory, the best in the entire world. If they win, it should be via outside interference by a gun. So there's a case to be made for MJF not taking a pin to the Righteous under any circumstances unless he is shot in the head. I mean, no, I understand that. I am open to them telling that story, but I get the pushback on the idea that even though it's 2-on-1, MJF shouldn't be losing. I think if MJF does the job, and it's because Adam Cole seems like he's at ringside on crutches, seems like he's there to help, but that's the moment he turns. You know, if it's the big climax of a story, then does that work, Eric? Not that I'm saying you would recommend that happening at this point, but if it is where Cole breaks up the friendship and betrays MJF and interferes with a crutch, or not a gun, but something else, and can MJF recover from that, or do you suddenly go, well, the Righteous, Vincent should be getting a title shot on the next pay-per-view because of it?
I've thought that the ROH tag titles were just sort of being used as a prop and a plot device for the whole storyline, and that they just legitimately don't really matter that much.
Yeah.
And I think that's the case. If I were going, to me, the big Adam Cole heel turn should be him taking the actual belt that matters off MJF, right? If they were going to go that route, which who knows what the plan, who knows what the original plan was, who knows, did they change the All In London finish to continue the storyline? Probably, it would seem. But yeah, the payoff should be, in theory, Adam Cole, I was never your friend, right? You know, if you're going to do the sort of bloodline Roman Reigns mid-match soliloquy kind of thing that, like, they've been doing, dialogue in the middle of a match for some reason, because, you need to explain it to the fans. Heighten the betrayal, right? Adam Cole standing, the ref is down, Adam Cole's got the belt, and he does a big speech as MJF is on his knees, and then he waffles him with the belt and wins the title, right? That would be high drama. That would be a good use of a belt as a prop. The ROH tag titles, kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Eric, let's do a quick rundown of WrestleDream. I'm going to throw to you just for a few sentences on each, what you think of the match and what you think the finish ought to be or will be or both. We'll start with Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr.
I assume Danielson goes over there. He's in Seattle. I think Danielson is probably getting his rematch against Kazuchika Okada in New Japan at Wrestle Kingdom in early January, January 4th, and that Danielson will return the favor to Okada in his home promotion and home country. That would argue keeping Danielson strong until then, so I assume Danielson will win an excellent match if you are into mat work.
All right, Hangman Page, Swerve Strickland, we heard from you earlier. Sum that up again or add anything else?
Yeah, I think Swerve is new and fresh at the top of the card. If they want to put him there, I would. I'd have him win here and setting him up as the number one contender to MJF, and I'd fit him in. Could be as early as Title Tuesday. There's going to be a baseball playoff a week from not this coming week, but the following week, where AEW is on Tuesday, head-to-head with NXT instead of Wednesday, so you could do that match there, or at Full Gear on November 18th. And Hangman, I think I've heard you or Todd or both mention, if Hangman's truly, down on his luck, down in the dumps or whatever and trying to recover, why would you give him the victory that quickly, right? Shouldn't he suffer a little bit more? That would make more sense logically from booking perspective.
Yep. All right, we already talked about it, but we'll get past these. We already talked about Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho, Kota Ibushi against Takeshita, Ospreay, Sammy. Any final thoughts on what they should do and will do?
I think Sammy gets his win back over Jericho now that we've talked that through.
All right. Then MJF, Vincent, and Dutch, we talked about that so recently. We'll skip that. Christian and Darby, Darby's got to win. Main event, best of three falls. Is it 2-1? Is it 2-0? Or do they go with a surprising finish and have Christian retain? And if Christian loses, should it be Luchasaurus finally turning on him? Or do you delay that and let Darby just get a clean win?
They don't seem to have built up the Luchasaurus turning because Luchasaurus sat there and took it the whole time when he was the champion and Christian was carrying around the belt. So if they do, I think you would understand why Luchasaurus finally just mad, but I don't think they've planted the seeds well enough to do that yet.
And Chris Statlander,
does Adam Copeland debut, I guess, is the big question. To close out the show, is Adam Copeland the closing shot, maybe having made the save for Darby? Or, if he's a heel, standing tall with Christian over Darby.
Do you want Adam Copeland getting involved in this?
I don't think he's a worthwhile signing because I don't think he's a difference mover. And I think WWE has run in WWE, including where they had to bring in Bryan Danielson to save that WrestleMania main event against Roman, proves that. But I'm not the son of a billionaire with unlimited money to spend. So if Tony Khan
has a soft spot for that era.
Yeah, if Tony Khan wants to do that, fine. It's, you know, hopefully Christian was not a great signing at first, but has certainly earned his money since then, unlike, say, Big Show, Paul White, and Mark Henry. So as far as we can tell on camera.
Yeah, I think it should be Darby's night, and if he wins, it should be about him. And if Copeland isn't showing up, or even if he is, it takes away from something. You know, Darby already has Sting. He doesn't need another legend in Copeland to be his big buddy. I would do something completely different with Copeland than have him do the obvious thing. I don't think it's a disaster if they do it, but my preference would be make it about Darby and let Darby win and let him celebrate in the ring and let that be enough. Chris Statlander and Julia Hart. Statlander just... I want her to be better than she is on the mic and in terms of her character. And I just thought she was like Wheeler Yuta-esque in her promo tonight. I'm going to beat you. And it's just not good. Her instincts, her natural charisma isn't there. It needs work. And this was a step back tonight, in my opinion. There's something there to build on with her. And I get why they're trying to go with it. It doesn't help that, you know, the stench of the best friend's cornball gimmick is there, but it just feels like I don't know. I don't want to be too hard on it, but man, I didn't think it was a good promo tonight. Eric, what about you?
Statlander felt more over before her last serious knee injury than she does in her comeback, which is unfortunate because she got the big rub of defeating the undefeated Jade Cargill before she left. Twice, and so you'd think that would be a catapult. I assume she wins this match. It's a weird match from a work standpoint because you have Julia Hart is so small and Statlander is so big in comparison that it's going to be weird to do the heel, you know, the regular psychology of a heel getting a lot of offense in a match and Statlander having to sell for the much smaller Julia Hart. But I assume Statlander goes over to continue her run here.
The word bitch has a specific, you know, like definition in a slang way. And it's like, to me, when I hear everybody call each other that, like when a guy says it to another guy, it has a little more sting because it has a female connotation to it. But when women just call each other that, I mean, it's not as bad as when, you know, Impact Wrestling, TNA, all the women are calling each other skanks every week on TV, but it's so unoriginal. And you're saying it like you're packing this extra punch. But what you're doing is calling someone a jerk because that's how the word is used colloquially now. It's like you're a bitch. You're bitching. You're a jerk. But it doesn't have a sting to it. It just seems like you have no originality, but you think you're saying something that's going to cause people to go, ooh. And if no one ever said it, that'd be one thing. But the fact that everybody says it all the time makes it even less effective. And to me, when I hear someone call themselves that, especially the women, I just think you couldn't have put less time and effort into developing your communication skills and picking up better words than that.
I think bitch is remains over in the broader pop culture, and you know, has the ooh aspect if someone says it on a playground, and so I would change it up a little, but I understand why they do it. Right, they do it because it works, even if.
Is it most often the best option?
I mean, I'm all for variety and not repetition, but that's because I mostly communicate via the writing medium where, you know, repetition is, unless you're doing it for effect, is generally not encouraged because it gets redundant in the reader's brain. I don't know. I guess it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you, and I bet it doesn't bother anybody under the age of, like, 40 would be my guess.
Yeah, and it's not about being bothered. Well, I guess I'm bothered by it, but I'm not worried about people being bothered by it. I'm worried about it losing its edge and being used as the sort of catch-all of I'm going to be edgy by doing what everybody else is doing. And, you know, the delivery matters, the context matters. What makes Julia Hart a bitch? Like, does it actually, or are you really just doing it for the cheap heat of, oh my God, it's like the edgiest word I'm allowed to say on TV, so I'm just going to say it to prove that I'm as edgy as everybody else.
I mean, I think the much more effective word in this specific case would be witch, because Julia Hart literally comes across like a witch in her ring, yeah. And spraying the mist. Yeah.
But she goes, Julia, you're a bitch, and you're no match for Chris Statlander. And then she did the third person, and I'm just like, I had to double eye roll on that one. So I don't know. I just raise your game, people. All right, then the four-way tag match, Orange Cassidy and Hook. Penta and Ray Phoenix, the Guns, and the Bucks. Winner gets a future AEW World Tag Team Championship match, although I'm sure before the winner of this match gets one, there'll be two teams with losing records with no backstory at all getting tag team title shots first.
Open challenge.
yeah.
An open challenge for a title opportunity. so I guess to me, this one ties into the result of FTR and Aussie Open, right? Naturally, this is less so in AEW, but generally speaking, booking 101 would be, if FTR wins, you would want a heel team to win, which I guess would be the Guns, but they've done that already. If Aussie Open wins, you could have a babyface team, which would argue for Luchas or the Bucks, although my guess is Phoenix is the international champion due to Moxley's audible and injury, so that's not likely. Do you want to go? I don't know that have we seen Aussie Open in the Bucks. Maybe they did like a throwaway match over the summer. But if Aussie Open holds the gold, you know, do you want to go to the Bucks that quickly, or do you want to build that up for? I guess you'd build that up for Full Gear, and it would be a great, you know, in ring match. Hook and Orange, I don't get the sense so far that, I mean, they haven't given them a bunch of tag team wins, right? Yeah. Or maybe they give them one. Remains to be seen whether they'll be together. So I guess I would want to see who wins. Although this match will go on first, right? Before the FTR-Aussie Open match. So,
not necessarily. They could open with a tag team title match. I mean, it's not Tony Khan's way usually, but there's a lot of matches on the show, a lot of titles, and I wouldn't rule it out, especially storyline-wise. If they want Aussie Open to win first, it opens up the door for Cassidy and Hook or the Bucks especially to win. But if Aussie Open end up with AEW tag belts, they're a rising act in AEW, but they're not as established as a top act. And then if you add Orange Cassidy and Hook, who are a new team, I think the AEW tag belts sort of feel like they did with the Acclaimed, which is, well, the fans are into them, but it doesn't feel top level because they just didn't do enough to give them top-level opponents either, because the Guns weren't at that level yet either. So, but I don't know that Tony's super worried about tag division at the top always feeling as important as the world title, the singles title.
I mean, I assume the Guns are eating the pin here. I just don't know, and I assume it would be the Bucks or Hook and Orange would be my guess, although they just did FTR and the Bucks again.
That's
weird
the thing,
yeah. One of the weird things we didn't talk about was the finish to the main event. So FTR bald, Dax jobs to Big Bill and Ricky shouldn't.
It almost looked
like
an accident. Like the ref counted three and there was supposed to be a breakup.
Yeah, and you know, FTR gun charge guy Cash was like, did he miss breaking up the pin? And Aubrey, after seeing how much heat Rick Knox got in the Phoenix Moxley match, did she just call it as a shoot? Which is how she should be calling it, right? The ref should be calling it as a shoot. otherwise, what are we doing? But it seems like logical booking, if you're going to do that, you know, WWE style, Aussie Open should have gotten the win to, like, further establish them. And I just assume Wheeler Yuta was eating the pin here, no matter who it was. So, yeah, I don't know if there was a screw-up at the end or not. But by rights now, if FTR retains, Big Bill and Ricky Stark should get the next title shot because they pinned the champs. I am, you know, I'll just hit FTR and Aussie Open since we're on the topic. I am so looking forward to this match, probably more than Danielson, Zack Sabre Jr. They made the top five of my matches of the year last year for their New Japan match in London at Royal Quest 2, I think. They had like a plus, a match north of 30 minutes that was just great back and forth, you know, reminded you of the Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express, or Midnight Express Fantastics back in the day, back in the 80s, late 80s. So I don't know that they'll be given north of 30 minutes on this pay-per-view, given that there's 10 matches on the main card, but I would – Punk's gone, so I would think it's easier to have book Aussie Open winning over FTR. I can't remember who won the match in London, but you know, could also argue for getting a win back. I just wish Aussie Open didn't lose to Adam Cole and MJF and Jericho and Sammy. I think that undercuts their credibility as a tag team title threat, but they are a great, so far untapped potential in AEW. So I'm hoping for Aussie Open to win, but I legitimately don't know who's going to win.
Yeah. And I suspect we'll hear something about the finish of that main event. But yeah, Cash didn't look disappointed to lose a match. He looked pissed off that his save wasn't seen as enough of a save to break up the cover. If that's the case, purely speculative, you got to be better about breaking up covers. Like, it's, you know, it's another one of my pet peeves, but you don't break up a pin by hitting the person on the back who's covering. You break up a pin by taking the leverage off the person making the pin so the person underneath can actually lift their shoulder. The ref should not be stopping their count because two people are stacked on top of someone whose shoulders are down instead of just one, even if one of those people is the partner of the person whose shoulders are pinned down. A breakup should break up the cover, and the person underneath the pin should lift their shoulder. And so make sure that you're there on time for that every time and make it look more real.
You mean just slapping the person on the back is not enough to make the save, Wade?
No, and piling on top of them isn't either. That makes it worse. That makes it harder to kick out. So, yeah, just it's just there's things that have just been whittled down from credible to just going through the motions. It's like, you know, Jericho's bad habit over the decades of soft whips into the ropes. You know, it's like, well, do it in Mexico, nobody cares. So I'm just going to do soft whips on the ropes. Why is the guy running the ropes? It's a bad enough move and you whip someone hard. Why make it look 10 times faker by just guiding them and then they have to do all the running themselves? There's so many things that are just sloppy that can get cleaned up and make everything just more immersive. And breaking up covers by really breaking them up, physically breaking them up, just charging into someone and knocking them off of your partner is the way to do it. And it's lazy and nobody even thinks about it anymore. Ricky Starks, Wheeler Yuta. Starks goes over here, right here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Rehab win for Ricky, much like Andrade got one over Juice tonight.
We had the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn promoting their Trios title match, and somebody was singing at the end, and another guy says, "You're making us look like nerds," and I was like, yep. That's not the way to introduce challengers to the titles that do not deserve to be on, do not need to even exist. Yeah,
the only suspension in this one is what will Max Caster say in his rap in Seattle.
Yeah, this match does not need to be on the show. But there's something for everyone, says Kevin Kelly or Nigel. One of them said there's something for everybody on the zero-hour show. Then Luchasaurus Nick Wayne. That should be – I mean, I guess that's appealing enough to try to get some people to tune in. You know, poor Nick Wayne going to take a beating of Luchasaurus. And it might have – you know, there might be a little backstory. Maybe there's a double turn, Luchasaurus and Nick Wayne double turn, and that leads to the finish somehow, some way. Nick Wayne turns on Darby, but then Luchasaurus doesn't like that because he wasn't told ahead of time, and then he helps Darby win. I don't know.
I think you've given that a lot more thought than anybody in AEW has. The size clash, Luchasaurus has to win, squashing the kid in his hometown. But the kid will probably just be happy to get on a show in his, you know, his general geographic area.
Yeah. Anything else you want to bring up from
We talked about Eddie Kingston and Shibata.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Thank you.
And I assume Eddie Kingston retains here, and this is one of his dream matches. He probably has to come up with a different finisher than a power bomb that he used to beat Claudio, or the back fist hitting Shibata in the head, because you're supposed to avoid headshots to Shibata, which would argue for why is he in the ring, but there we are. I assume Eddie Kingston retains. And then the two matches they added tonight, Josh Barnett versus Claudio to the pre-show, I assume Claudio wins that. And it'd be great to see Josh Barnett do a job, just because I'm sure he's the kind of guy who doesn't like doing those kind of things as a former UFC fighter. And then the most bizarre thing, I missed it during the rundown because the rundown was like 15 minutes long tonight, of all the various matches and all the various shows. But there's a mixed tag, 8-person tag with Shane Taylor, Lee Moriarty, Mercedes Martinez, and Diamante.
That's right.
Satoshi Kojima, New Japan, former New Japan champion, I think, and legend for sure. Keith Lee, Athena, and Billy Starks. Now, that match is just for the 6,000 subscribers or whatever it is who watch Ring of Honor every week, the TV show, because that's where a lot of these storylines are coming from, I think. And I thought Athena was a heel on Ring of Honor, so I don't understand. Billy Starks was like, she was trying to turn Billy Starks heel, but Billy Starks doesn't want to do bad things. I don't actually watch Ring of Honor, although I might watch it if it ends up on the streaming service. So that's just a weird combination. I don't know who's going to win, and I don't really care. What is the new era, Wade? I guess that's a good place as any to end this. Is it the announcement of a TV deal with a streaming component on Max? Is it Adam Copeland is here?
What's the original context of that phrase being introduced into the discussion and the lexicon for the show? Because it's not like a big part of the marketing.
So a couple weeks ago, Tony Khan did a voiceover, sort of introducing WrestleDream and why it exists, basically. And he hit the line at the end, I think at the end, that it's going to be a new era. And they have flicked at it. It's more of a thing that I think wrestling journalists at media availabilities are asking about
just because
it seems like it will be new. And Tony Khan also has sort of a mixed record. Like there was the time in the March pay-per-view a couple of years ago when he announced he had signed Christian, and people were hoping for, I don't know who they were hoping for, but it was somebody a lot more important than Christian. And so it was viewed as a big disappointment. And so, like, every time Tony Khan sort of makes the big, hints at a big announcement, it sends the speculation meter wild, and you get all sorts of clickbait sites saying all sorts of clickbait things. I'm just curious, what is it going to be, right? Is it as simple as a TV deal, which is a new era for Tony Khan and his bank account, but not so much a new era for us fans,
right,
who will continue probably watching it on Warner Brothers Discovery channels, or is it more, the thing to me would be more exciting, which would be it's some sort of payoff related to the angle that ended Dynamite on Wednesday with the guys in the wearing black with the MJF mask on.
But that's awful, because how would Tony Khan know that at the time he said it if that's the payoff?
Right, yeah, I don't know that it's going to be logical.
That'd be awful. As a promoter, I'm going to give a catchphrase to a show based on an angle that hasn't happened yet, and I have no part in making happen in terms of the internal narrative of the show that I'm putting on.
That would be the bad meta, right, Wade? the elusive, where is Wade on the meta? So, you know, what's meta and what's not? I think everyone can know that when they see it. That's the bad type of meta in terms of it logically making sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think the new era is going to be?
I think we'll never hear about it again, and it was nothing.
Really?
I think it was a throwaway line that got way more attention, and Tony's excited that people are going to tune into the pay-per-view to find out what it's about, and I think he's going to no-sell, and he's going to not say a thing and then mock people for blowing it out of proportion. They haven't said anything about it on TV. Why, if it's important, why wouldn't they market it on TV beyond that?
Well, they've said it's going to be – it's it has been a catchphrase in the promos for the show, right? The voiceovers and the it just the
should
announcers
there be a discussion? I mean, like if it's really,
the announcers haven't
know.
Speculated at length about what it could be, right? They haven't put stuff out there, right? To your
just,
point about it not being a focus, yeah.
It's just it's a new era because it's a new pay per view, and we have and we're paying tribute to Antonio Inoki, and we didn't think people would make such a big deal out of it. Like, so therefore the announcers can't talk about it. The wrestlers can't talk about it. Tony Khan doesn't officially say, you know, he used to do big announcements and they got mocked into stopping, although he did it three times, you know, two, three times more. So it didn't seem like the mocking is what stopped him because that's human nature. But you know, it's like the words on the big words on screen, WWE did. People hated it, but they had to do it for 4 more weeks. So it didn't seem like they stopped because people hated it. I mean, I'm being slightly facetious in saying that for like almost the shock value of what it's not going to mean anything. But I honestly wouldn't rule out if he didn't really think that hard about what that catchphrase would lead to in terms of speculation. And now he did in the Q&A seem to sort of be enjoying the media asking about it. And he's saying, I'm not going to say anything because I want you guys to tune in on Sunday. But that to me is in a way going, I don't want to tell you it's nothing. But it's nothing. But by the pay-per-view, just in case, it's not nothing. So there's a little part of me that's almost hoping for that because it's just kind of – it would teach people not to report this means AEW is buying New Japan. But maybe it's a very good secret and it's going to be huge. And if so, I'd be purely speculating on it. But it better not be Adam Cole forming a new faction with Era in the name and Tony knew about it beforehand. And it shouldn't be Adam Copeland either. That's not a new era. That's just a wrestler showing up.
That's an old era, actually.
Yeah. I mean, the new era could – if it's – and this wouldn't even be the context to introduce, like, some, like, massive, like, restructuring of how AEW does title matches or introducing a new title. Like, it's just – it's a pay-per-view that's just full of matches people want to see. You don't need to add some sort of newsy, like, bombshell to it. And so, yeah, it just seems like the words are bigger than – than what possibly would make any sense to have on the show.
Well, then Tony Khan, in every interview he does for the next X number of weeks, if it turns out to be a giant nothing burger and it really didn't mean anything, it was just me using it as a throwaway, it's all he's going to be asked about. So, he better
show
this.
What Tony should say is, yeah, I did a voiceover and I just sort of like kind of didn't think it through and just said, it's going to be a new era. And we kind of like that because it's a new pay-per-view title and we've got Japanese wrestlers on it. It's a new title in our portfolio. And I really didn't think people would run away with it, but you know, you guys did. And I'm sorry. Like that should be an answer if that's really the truth.
Yeah. I feel like he will try and spin his way out of this thing. Cause that is more his way of doing things, saying a lot of words, but not actually making a lot of news, but I could
great
see,
question,
you know,
Eric.
Yes, that would be the first thing. A great question, and then a big nothing burger answer to match the nothing burger under your scenario.
People stopped saying nothing burger like 4 years ago, unless they're – never mind. Go ahead.
Is that offend you because of your vegan nature?
No.
Impossible burger?
Impossible burger. I'm not offended. I think that phrase got overused so much like in 2019 that people stopped using it in 2020 and you're the last person left.
Got it. That we ended
I'm
with in, a,
I'm
lesson,
insulting, I'm
a pedantic lesson from Wade Keller. There should that instead of just Javier from Miami getting his own song, that should get its own song. Can the Torch Music guy get on that one? No, seriously. Yeah. I am actually now I might more so than FTR Aussie Open, I might be looking forward to the explanation of New Year more than anything on this show, just because it would be hilarious if your theory proved true.
Yeah. I don't really see what else makes sense because even a new TV deal. I mean, I will put it, no, I can't think of anything that actually will live up to the bombast and bloviated nature of such a phrase. I just don't think anything can live up to that. So,
I mean, to me, a new era is when the Outsiders debut on WCW Nitro, right?
Yeah.
Literal new era, right? There was the before the Outsiders debuted and the after, and it was a completely different promotion for
yes, men, totally.
Ways good
well,
to bad. Yeah.
Maybe the new era is, and this would be so meta and appropriate for AEW, Tony Khan stepping down as booker to recharge and hiring a new booker and announcing it on the pay-per-view.
I would love to be there. I'd pay $5 for a stream of your head exploding if that happened.
It's going to be a new era in AEW. As you know, as many of you know, I'm a booker of this company besides the owner and the promoter and the guy who makes matches on the fly during shows and tells Tony Schiavone what the new match officially is. And yeah, I'm, after all these years, after on the anniversary of Dynamite, we're going to have a new booker, and I'm excited to introduce him and then him or her. I won't speculate on who it is. And that'd be totally the meta way to do it, too. I mean, it's just AEW be so meta as to announce a booking change on TV.
Oh, well, hopefully it's the announcement of a new TV deal, because at least that would be a new story worth sticking your teeth into about what this means for the promotion's prospects, et cetera, et cetera.
I want the new era to be that there's a new rule that announcers cannot wear masks.
Wow.
It's like let's just have this arbitrary rule. No, you can't text while driving, and pro wrestling announcers can't just wear a mask on TV. And then
I think the new rule should be you can't say the word nothing burger on AEW television, because as I've learned tonight, that was played out in 2019.
That was played out by 20. Well, everyone is using it in 2019, but it's one of those phrases. I'm sure you love it. I'm talking more about this. One of those phrases when people first started saying it, I'd like a Google chart of when it grew in popularity. Somebody out there send me an infographic on it. But like people said, it was like, oh, that's kind of clever. And then like 3 months later, it was a little less clever because like everyone who thought it was clever but was late to the game started saying it. And now we're years later and you're still saying it.
It's kind of like saying the word bitch in a wrestling promo.
You said it, not me, but it crossed my mind. Mostly I heard a bunch of politicians in the House of Representatives saying that about bills. And I was just like, just shut up. It's not clever. And then like 4 years later, I'm saying that under my breath when you say nothing burger on a wrestling show.
Yep. Wow. We certainly ended on a high note here on a Saturday night when it's already Sunday in the East Coast time.
Yeah, it is. It crossed over. This was the last 3 minutes of the show was quite the nothing burger, Eric.
Yes, as it turns out. Yeah.
Well, it's been fun. Thank you, Eric. Always a pleasure.
Plugs for the post show tomorrow.
What about it?
You'll be doing come join Wade and
you think anyone's left after the Nothing Burger talk? We're talking to
just the hardest of the hardcore. Zach from Texas and Javier.
So. Yeah, so VIP members, you know, we're doing a post show.
And who will be on the post show, Wade?
Yeah, probably Todd and Rich.
Okay, glad to see a lot of preparation has gone into that one. All right.
Well, I mean, no one's told me they're not going to do it, and that's our you know default crew. But there could be a late substitution. So
you're really selling this way. I tell you.
I'd sell it harder if it was an hour and a half ago.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Yep. Always a pleasure.